It's time for the one show that takes you where others won't. Out into the wilderness, past the frontiers of what you thought was possible, with your own personal guide, the Pilgrim, on the 405. Mr. Will Crist.
Well, welcome to Pilgrim Talks here on this just a beautiful day in Orange County and in Laguna Beach. You know, we've been talking about job creation for the past month. We've been looking at the book, The Coming Jobs War, by Jim Clifton, the CEO of Gallup Poll and the Gallup organization. And what we've discovered is that we have to create a lot of new jobs in this country to stay in the place that we are, to maintain the kind of lifestyle that we've come accustomed to. So he's laid that out there, that we need this. I'm not going to tell you how many he mentioned. If I told you it's 5 million, you'd probably freak out. But he said there's a lot of jobs we've got to create in the next 15 years to supply the global GDP, which is going to triple over the next 15 years. And those jobs are going to be either here or in some other place. And the question is, what do we need to do to have them here? So we've been talking to entrepreneurs. We've been talking to, we'll be talking next week to some candidates for local city offices, for the mayor of Orange. A candidate's going to be with us talking about what she believes can be done to help create jobs. We've talked to entrepreneurs. We've talked to incubator people in incubators. We've talked to, and I have been preparing to talk with some educators in the local school districts about that. And it occurs to me that there are some places that we can begin to talk to who are actually preparing people for those jobs. And those jobs are going to be very different from the jobs that we had 15 years ago. And as I stumbled across a couple of institutions that are doing very well, when other educational institutions are tightening their belt, raising their tuition, reducing classes, the number of classes are being offered, California Baptist University has added 37 new faculty positions for the fall semester. A whole new division in online and professional services, online professional training, that is there to prepare people for the jobs that are coming. So I thought it'd be really interesting to hear from a fellow who's had an enormous amount of experience in the MBA programs and working in business, as well as working in education, academia, especially around this whole idea of online education. So I want to welcome Dave Poole, Dr. Dave Poole, the Vice President for Online and Professional Services Program at California Baptist University in Riverside. So welcome, Dave.
Well, thank you, Will. It's good to be with you. Looking forward to chatting with you here.
Well, so let's talk a little bit about, tell me a little bit about what CBU Online is about.
Well, always exciting to talk about what we're doing here at CBU Online here at Cal Baptist, because we really are focused on what you're here. The term really is the new normal student, and the new normal student is really the individual that's 25 to 45 years of age, that's going back to school to complete their bachelor's degree, or in some cases their graduate degree, and it is the vast majority of the higher ed population. So for us, That's the population that we serve, is that individual that's working individuals, or in many cases, to complete their degree, there are people that are out of work currently, and they're going back to retooling as well. And we do that in a variety of ways. It's started out originally as degree completion programs that were on ground in the traditional sense of going to class one night a week for 4 hours, and what we've transitioned is moving into the distance education, where it's a hybrid format or fully online format.
So tell me what degree completion means.
Sure. Many universities, particularly privates, have been offering for a number of years degree completion programs. They're typically the student that went through and maybe took 20 or 30 units, maybe 60 units at a junior college or community college, and for whatever reason didn't go on to a four-year, whether that's private or public, and they went into the workforce, or they had families. It's kind of a variety of reasons. Life happened that didn't let them finish the goal. So These are individuals that are coming back. Sometimes they're coming back after being out of school for 20 years. Many of them have been out of school for 5 or 10 years easily, and they complete their degree. They're completing those upper division courses, but this time they're going after their major, whether it's business or psychology or whatever that might be, and they really have most of the general education units under their belt. So they're going back and finishing what they originally started. That's why they call it degree completion.
So do they get credit for the work they've done outside of academia?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the institutions that are really looking to what is needed in education today and what's needed in the workforce environment today do things like assessment of prior learning. We call it APL, and we do it here at CBU Online, where you can actually go and you can get upwards of 30 units towards most bachelor's are about 120, 130 units of undergraduate work. But you can actually go back and have faculty members in specific areas assess prior learning, assess work experience that you've had. You put together a portfolio. It could be writings, a number of things that demonstrate that you've done that, and then you actually get credit for it. So we actually are one of those institutions that do that. A number of them do and have been for quite a few years.
Wow. Now, CBU Online, how long have you been, how long has this program been going?
Well, I was hired to come in to start this division in January of 2010, and I got here with an administrative assistant and two recruitment personnel. And I was going to take over in the fall the degree completion programs that the university had in place, but they were actually housed in the different schools. For example, those that were going through a degree completion program in business, it was housed in the School of Business. If it was psychology, it was the School of Behavioral Sciences, etc. And so between January and the fall, put together the team, put together the faculty and staff and administrative team necessary to actually start this unit or this division in the fall of 2010. So from that time, that's really the official time that we started. So this is, we just kicked off the fall here this year. It's been 2 years. And we've been very fortunate. We started off with about 589 students, and it looks like from a report I just got today, we're looking like we're trending upwards of 1,100. So we've doubled in 2 years at this point, but I still have the rest of the year to go.
My goodness. Well, now, Cal Baptist itself has seen phenomenal growth as well, right?
Yeah, great point. You know, we've got the president is Dr. Ron Ellis, and he is in his 18th year here. He is a tremendous leader. He's an individual that is very visionary, very entrepreneurial, and is not your typical college president in the sense that he really looks at trends, he looks at needs, he really looks at the workforce needs and trends in workforce training and what jobs are needed out there, and has put together a tremendous program. He has taken the university as a whole from 808 students when he got here in 1994 to the official count is about 6,031 students here in the fall since he's been there. And much of that growth has really, really happened since about 2003, he would tell you. So Cal Baptist as a whole really takes a look at what the needs of the community, in this case the Inland Empire, Orange County, Los Angeles, the Southern California region, but even from a global standpoint. And so you see things like developing School of Nursing, School of Engineering, where we actually just kicked off a School of Aviation Sciences. And so those types of things, healthcare, Allied Health has been started just since I've been here. So these are areas where there's a tremendous need, and if you're looking, whether you're looking at adults for me and the types of programs that I have, or our younger generation, those 18-year-olds that are coming out of high school, we really have well-positioned ourselves, and again, this goes back to Dr. Ellis's leadership, really well-positioned ourselves to take people into programs where when they graduate there will be jobs. And we've got a pretty good track record even on our main campus of getting job placement, so we're filling that need.
So part of what people are doing when they come back for a degree completion, they may be changing jobs.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, you know, if you think about it, if you could be a very successful people, and people that come back for degree completion are not people that have not been successful. In fact, many times they have, but they never finished something that they wanted to start. They never took advantage, and it just wasn't a priority, and that's okay. I mean, they didn't take advantage or feel like they didn't take advantage of something they may have wanted to do, which could include, and many times people do this, you know, they've gone down a certain path, and it's good work, and it takes care of the family, and it's been consistent and very positive, but they always wanted to go into business, or they always wanted to go into healthcare, or they always wanted to go into education. And so by going back, many of our degree completion students, that is their goal, is to make that transition, but they know they've got to have the education and really the network, and which education can provide you too, the network to be able to do that.
And Cal Baptist has a pretty strong alumni group, don't you?
They do, very strong. And you know, when I was working at Pepperdine, the USC people used to always talk about their alumni group, and USC has a tremendous, they've spent a tremendous amount of resources on there, has paid off very nicely. And I think schools that do that really get to reap the benefits. With Cal Baptist, you really, and particularly, having only been here a little over 2.5 years, I have to give the credit to Dr. Ellis. He has really established what we call the Lancer Nation, in the sense that when you come to Cal Baptist, you're a part of something that's going to take you throughout your career. You're going to give back. You're going to come back on campus and help. You're going to really be what he would call salt and light in the community. In other words, really make a difference. But that's that Cal Baptist grad making the difference there.
When you're doing online education, mm-hmm. it seems to me that you are actually preparing people through the process of getting their degree through online education or hybrid courses. You're actually preparing them to work in a very different workplace.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And excuse me, when I got here, I wanted to make sure, because online education has been around for 20, 25 years. In fact, distance education has been around for a couple of centuries. If you think about, back in Europe, where you would have correspondence schools, and then that came over to the United States. So it's the traditional classroom setting is not unusual to not have that. But traditionally for online education, it's taking a learning management system. In our case, we use Blackboard. eCollege is another one. Learning House, some of these that where a faculty member might slap a, and this is probably a crude way of putting it, but they'll slap their syllabus on there, and they'll slap up what an assignment. The student looks at it, does the work, writes a paper, slaps it back up there, and the faculty member grades it. And there's no, that student engagement, that interaction isn't there. And for many, many years, that's what online education was. And for some, you still see that for here at Cal Baptist, and for a lot of institutions these days, I would say the more progressive ones, they are really taking advantage of the new technologies that are out there. We use JabberTalk, we use WebEx, which is one that a number of people may be familiar with, your listeners may be familiar with. Things where we have student engagement, where we see them face-to-face, or other tools that get them engaged where they can hear each other and listen to each other and see each other. And by using those technologies and getting comfortable with them, these are the things that you're starting to see and have seen utilized in a number of business settings. So it really does train them to be comfortable and more familiar with some of the new technologies that are out there that could very well play into what their job is and give them that edge.
Yeah. So you use JabberTalk, you use WebEx. What other tools have you found to be really helpful?
You know, one that's really inexpensive but it's great for education is called VoiceThread. I use that in my leadership classes. And the beauty of that particular tool is, if I have a lecture, they can hear my voice, or you can even do the video where they can see you while the PowerPoint's going on, and then you have them engage in the discussion. Now, the beauty there, because it's an asynchronous tool, meaning that it's not, everybody doesn't have to be there at the same time. If I pose a question and then I want them to have a discussion, they click on the comment button, they comment about my comments, or they comment about another student's comments, and they actually can have, it's kind of a threaded discussion, the old threaded discussion where they're typing it, on steroids, because you're hearing and seeing people, but you don't have to be there at the same time. And that's the beauty of online education. It doesn't have to be synchronous, even though we do some things synchronous, meaning at the same time. It doesn't, but you still get that engagement, and that would be one of a number of examples of things we use.
Talk a little bit about your leadership class.
There's two courses that I teach at the undergraduate level. One is Leadership in Organizations, and then Organizational Behavior and Management. And I'm about to start up the OB, Organization Behavior class, in our MBA program coming up here in the next couple of months. And for me, and maybe it probably goes back to my days at Pepperdine, I really have, what's important to me is I remember when I was getting taught leadership classes going through school, I always liked it when it was somebody who had actually been out there, had gotten kicked around a little bit, who had done, you know, who had actually done something, who had actually been a leader, as opposed to just looking at the theory. I've come to really appreciate theoretical concepts when you can have application to them. So in my classes, when we're talking about, you know, transformational leaders, Bruce Avolio and Burns and Avolio, who have really taken that to the next level, that theoretical concept, it's being able then to give examples, whether it's examples from me or other people, to how that comes into play, or how being a transactional leader, how important that is too. It's not just always being transformational. And so in my courses, and even in the org behavior course, I want to make sure people understand taking that theory to practice. And that is really, really critical, particularly with adult students, degree completion students. You can get away with it. If they're an 18-year-old, they don't have a whole lot of experience they're bringing to the classroom, life experience. And you can get away with giving them theory and such. But here at Cal Baptist, even for those folks, we don't do that. But when you have an adult, you're talking about somebody that has been out and been around the block a little bit, and they're expecting to have something that they can chew on and actually apply the next week after class. And so that's how I look at it, and I think that's how we, you know, at Cal Baptist and certainly here at CBU Online, that's a critical piece of that.
You've been involved with MBA programs for a long time in a variety of institutions. Mm-hmm. Do you find that students today are any different from where they were 5, 10, 15 years ago?
You know, that's a great question. I've worked with executive students more than you know, probably the predominant amount when I was at Pepperdine for 13 years. But then at Chapman, it really was more of the traditional age. Most of them at the MBA level were 20, 21 years old. They were fresh off of their bachelor's. And then here it's been a variety. I think the basic tenets of what they're looking for is very similar. What I sense is that more and more each year, it's please give me something that I can take and make a difference in my job, or if I'm looking for a job, that it can really help me. How can it take me to the next level? How can it give me the knowledge that will help my employer or my future employer? I think they're a little, strangely enough, it might sound a little funny to say this, but I think the students are a little deeper on that subject than maybe in the past.
This might be an obvious question, but tell me about their facility in using online technology.
Boy, that is a great question, because you would assume that maybe somebody in their 40s is going to be really green on this compared to that 25-year-old. And it's funny, when I was hiring faculty, and adding faculty to CBU Online, one of the first faculty members that I looked at was an individual who was much older than your typical faculty member. And what she did is she came up to me and she said, as we talked, she said, you know what, I don't want to finish my career doing what I've been doing for the last 30 years. I need to understand this and learn this. And if you will teach me, or your folks, you know, that you put together that do this will teach me, I really think I can make a much broader difference to my students and really make an impact on the latter part of my career. Now, that you don't see every day, but that would be an example of the one end where I have some faculty that are a little younger, that are actually new to some of this technology, and I think most of it comes into play with attitude. And the same way we talked about faculty here, but you asked me about students. I think a lot of it has to do with attitude, but if you start looking, I think it was the Pew Research Center put out a report a year or two ago, and if I had it handy, I'd pull it up, but and they talked about trends in usage of technology, and I'm talking about texting, smartphones, some of the basics that we almost take for granted these days because it's a normal. And you'd be surprised that if you introduce a new technology for most of these adult students, they just need the explanation and they can grasp it because they use it every day. And let me give you one other example. My daughter is a senior in college. Well, back in 2000, this would have been in 2000, she was a sophomore, I think, in 2007. She took an online class at a public high school, and they'd been doing it for a number of years. So she walks in, and now there is an expectation with these students, and she'll be 22, so she's getting close to that 25 mark. In another couple of years, many, many students, which are, again, the majority are over the age of 25, that population in higher ed, have had and used technologies like this for a number of years. So they have an expectation that that's going to just be a part of what a classroom environment is.
That's amazing. What about textbooks? Are you still requiring students to use printed hardback textbooks?
Yeah, great question. A lot of changes are happening with the publishers, and you know, some of that's been driven by some of organizations like Apple and some others that have really got into education more than just computers. I will tell you, they've obviously transformed some of the industry and are continuing to do that. The textbook publishers are finding that students really, many of them, want that digital textbook. And while the hard text is not going away necessarily, more and more students are asking us to, if they have a Kindle, or you can take a Kindle app and put it on a PC. I've got that. It doesn't cost anything. It's a free app. The cost of textbooks are significantly less. The margins, if you talk to the publishers, they'll tell you that the margins on those books, those digital books, are pretty good these days. But the other thing that they're doing is now many publishers, because many publishers are allowing you to bundle their text in the sense that I've got an organization behavior textbook, and I normally use, out of 14 chapters, I might use 8 of those chapters in that particular book. Well, you don't want the student to sit there and pay for a full book, but what they're starting to allow faculty to do is take those chapters and bundle those together. I'm sure that their margins are just as good by doing that, but what it does is it encourages them. Now I can actually have students add another text or two or more information without having them have some of that book that they may not be using. Now, for the most part, I use most of the book, but it's a lot of changes in the way textbooks are now being digitized. And it's, if you think about it, this takes a long time to do. You're talking about millions and millions of texts that are used in higher ed across the board. So I think it's a very positive thing.
Well, now, speaking of new jobs, going from 500 students to 1,000 students and more, you must have created new jobs just by the very fact that you exist now. Is that right?
Sure. Yeah, and on a smaller scale, that's right. I had when I started out, I had a dean and two deans. One was a dean of academics, and one was a dean of technology. And the dean of technology and I obviously are part-time because we don't teach full-time. The academic dean, because he was the academic dean, was part-time. So collectively, we were probably the equivalent of one full-time faculty member. So the beauty is now we're up to about 37 faculty. We have lectures. And so we've created, if you think about it, that organization of four people if you add the 37 new faculty, but you add an additional 40 or so folks, just under 40, we've got, I believe, 72 employees in 2 years at Online and Professional Studies. So it's not just faculty, but we built that. Then you have administrative people, you have IT people, you have academic support people, you have admissions. We're really somewhat of a university within a university because we have the functions of financial aid and registrar here and admissions that you would find in general in the university, but they're just for ops. Now, what I'm not adding to that mix is we have somewhere in the neighborhood, I don't have the exact number for the fall here yet, but it's somewhere in the neighborhood of about 145 adjuncts that teach clout courses for us as well. So those are jobs that are being created. Those are part-time jobs that are being created. So with the 72 to 75 plus another 145, we've, in a very short period of time, we've been able to put some employment together here.
Congratulations. And now that's not just you. CBU itself has added additional people as well. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. I say don't quote me on this, but obviously I'm live, so I'm getting quoted. I think when I got here, there was probably, and this is 2.5 years ago, I want to say there was, the president had told me there was maybe 350 employees, not outsourced employees, that would be an additional. The university has run very, very efficiently. A lot of higher ed institutions don't. But I believe there's about 350, and I want to say there's probably somewhere in the neighborhood of about five or 550 just in the last 2 years that have been added overall. That would probably include mine as well, not counting my adjuncts. So the university is doing very, very well, and it's people that are contributing to others who are learning to then go out in the workforce and add to the workforce.
Well, that's amazing. Not only are you assisting people in preparing for jobs, you're also creating new jobs in the process, and that you're to be commended for that, David. That's wonderful.
Well, I appreciate that. We've got some great things. I think I've chatted with you in the past on the books for creating jobs for upcoming graduates that we're going to do.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I'll tell you, one of the things that we're just kicking off now, the planning stages, is if you think about it, you're reading all these stories about some students that are not able to find jobs graduating out of college. What we'd like to do is take those individuals and actually put them in a training program, maybe call it a fellowship intern program, where in this case it might be English graduates and it might be business graduates, using that as an example. And we take them through a training program where they learn how to set up an office, where they learn how to turn the coffee on, where they learn how to interact with people. And we teach them the basics. And then if they go down the education track where they would be teaching at the higher ed level, then we have them start mentoring and working with faculty. And maybe that starts out with the paper grading and working and learning how to teach online and starting to be a guest lecturer. And then ultimately team teaching with that faculty member. And let's say it's an English major. And then what happens throughout about a 6 to 9 month process of training, then as we look at our partner institutions that are overseas, for example, that are looking for people to teach English as a second language, we now will place them over there. And by the way, while they're over there, and they could be teaching online and face-to-face over there, we have a fellowship for them where they're completing their master's degree. So they get a little stipend for this, they get on-the-job training, and ultimately they could stay with us for longer, or now when those positions open up, they are fully on the front end to be able to go into that. If you do it with a business major, we can do the same thing as with doing the same kind of training, but training them to open up different educational centers and run business units for us. So as you can see, you take that into different disciplines. That can be a very exciting thing. We may start out with five or six people. We may make that 10 the next year. Maybe we make that 20, depending on the demand.
That's just fascinating. I'm amazed, and I'm overwhelmed. That's wonderful. Can you stick around after the break and
sure.
Talk a little bit more about what you see in the future for not only education but for business and the economy in general?
I'd be happy to.
Well, let's just take a break here and hear a word from our sponsors.
Okay.
I'm Al Strauss with Sandler Training. Talk to you about rule number 38. The problem the prospect brings you is never the real problem. When people have heard this rule and thought about it a bit, if they've been in sales for more than a few months, they almost always say, well, that's obvious. I've had lots and lots of prospects that told me what they wanted, I showed them what they wanted, and they didn't buy it. So it seems that it would be obvious. The problem is, most folks don't understand it, and you get in the middle of the conversation, and here's a prospect who's interested in something, you've got the something, and you just show up. And what you really need to learn how to do is ask a bunch more questions, because frankly, in most cases, the prospect doesn't even understand what the real problem is. And so if you ask three or four more questions about what they claim they need or are looking for or want, you're going to discover that it morphs, it changes, sometimes dramatically. What they end up needing is perhaps even diametrically opposed to what they originally said they were looking for. So ask the questions. Don't take the first thing they give you. Dive down into the real issues, and you're going to have yourself a much better day selling to this prospect.
Do you want a free analysis of your inbound marketing? Do you want it in 30 seconds or less? Then check out Marketing Grader, the free marketing tool from HubSpot. It's simple. Just go to marketinggrader.com. Enter the URL that you want to analyze, and Marketing Grader will instantly give you a detailed report grading your lead generation, mobile marketing, social media, competitive benchmarking, and more. It's simple, it's powerful, and it's free. MarketingGrader.com.
Do you recognize them in your office? It's a common problem for executives and employees everywhere. There's John, over there. He just seems to have his own vision. Unfortunately for you, it's not your company's vision. Then there's Mary, who always seems to fall short of what's expected. You've got people that need to turn it up a notch if you're ever going to hit your goals. The never-ending cost of losing people and having to train the rookies. You constantly worry about losing key people you have become too dependent on. Extended Disc is designed for business owners, executives, and employees just like you. Extended Disc provides you with information to make better business decisions with confidence. Extended Disc helps you and your organization to be more profitable by avoiding decisions that result in expensive mistakes, wasted resources, and time. You see the problem. Extended Disc, the solutions you need to push performance and growth. It's time you made a call to Extended Disc for the solutions you need. Extended Disc, toll free, 1-800-257-7481, or go to www.extendeddisc.com.
And now back to Will and his guest.
Well, we've been having a fascinating conversation with Dr. David Poole, the Vice President for Online Professional Studies at California Baptist University in Riverside. These guys are, well, it's not just guys. These men and women out there are doing a tremendous job of not only creating job opportunity, but also preparing people for the coming jobs in the next 15, 25 years. So, Dave, tell us a little bit more. Now, I'm fascinated. When you think about online education, that's not just Southern California. That's a global presence. Do you have many international students who are participating online with this being the only contact they have with Cal Baptist?
We do have a few, and it's interesting that if you look at studies, a lot of times people will think if you offer online courses, then you must have people from all over the country. And the bigger players in this market, such as University of Phoenix and Liberty University, some of those folks, that would be the case. But in most cases, it's generally people will take courses within a 30 to 50-mile radius of your main campus, or if you have an educational facility, they do that. So they're actually fairly local. In our case, and I had just pulled that up this morning. We have students, while they're primarily in the California region, we have students from the Northwest. We have students that are on the East Coast in Pennsylvania, and we have students in Minnesota. We have Wisconsin. So a few of those, 1,100 students, we have a number of them that are coming from that. We have currently that are two from outside the United States. One's from Lithuania. We've had students from China in Southeast Asia. And my sense is, as we continue to grow, that number will grow. But the predominant students are going to be within a particular region. Now, as we grow, we're adding educational service centers. That will include international locations where we'll make that available. We'll make that distance education available, and so then it would grow from that area. So that's kind of the plan there.
Wow! Now, when you have those international service centers, will your online faculty here at the home, the mothership, will they be participating in the classes that are offered to that group around that center?
Yes, they will. I think our first prototype center is just launching this month, at the end of this month, in Temecula. We do have centers. When I say prototype, it's actually has been constructed out to a certain specification with classrooms, and it has kind of a Starbucks feel in the lobby area. And while we do have facilities in Northern California and Central California, Santa Clara and Clovis, and also in the main campus here in Riverside, this Temecula Center is a little unique. And this is kind of a long answer to your question, but if you think about it, many online students, they might be working and doing team projects or working together on things, even though it's from a distance. But if you are in their community and you've got a place, kind of that Starbucks feel where you've got the coffee flowing, you've got the nice furniture, you've got some computers, where that group can come in and they actually can work together if they so desire, or if you just need a place to hang out and study or do your work, you've actually got something local within that 30 to 50 mile radius to do that. So if you think about it, as we look at China and Singapore and some of these other countries, we would have something. It would obviously have the flavor of the country there, on from the accoutrements that might be in it. But we would actually have faculty that would, our campus faculty would be teaching at a distance using our technologies. But I also, because I would use hybrid as well, this also gives me an opportunity to take faculty and give them an international experience or add to their experience of international work where they might go over for 4 weeks or for 8 weeks at a time. Our courses are all 8-week sessions. So instead of sending a faculty member over there for a year or two, I can give those short-term experiences so the students can actually see them. Maybe they see them for 3 or 4 weeks, and then the last 3 or 4 weeks, they see them using our technology online when they're back here in the States.
Are you as excited about that as I'm getting?
I have no excitement about this at all. this is, again, and I have to give the credit to Dr. Ellis because his entrepreneurial nature, really, he has given me a playground and allowed me to, under his guidance, obviously, allowed me to do something it's kind of a one-in-a-lifetime experience. I've been in higher ed and business for a lot of years, but never in a situation where you're really, you're doing a startup, and that's what this really is. It's a startup with some foundation to it, but to be able to do it in a way that takes and utilizes new technologies and really doesn't just sit there and talk about it. A lot of times education does a lot of talk, but there's not a lot of action. But we're able to do that, and so it's a very exciting venture. As we brought people on, we tell them outside of the missional fit that's necessary for Cal Baptist here, and that we certainly don't apologize for. That's the first thing. But second is really attitudes 110%, and work ethic comes right behind it. If you've got the attitude and work ethic, and you're entrepreneurial, and you're even if you don't know something, you're willing to learn it, we'll make sure that you have people that can help you succeed in that. And that's really how I see my job is to give people the resources they need to be successful, at least as much as I can do.
So let's talk a little bit about what do you see in the next 10 to 15 years? And you can pick economy, you can pick jobs, You can pick academia. Talk a little bit about what the trajectory that you're aiming at because of what you believe about what's coming.
Well, I think let's talk about jobs and academia, maybe kind of put those together. I think we're what you're going to continue to see when you look at research, and some of the research, Edge Ventures is a wonderful research-based company, particularly for higher ed and even the online piece, but they do a little bit more than that. What you're seeing is the workforce is continuing to get more educated. Even if you go back to the high school, back in 1985, about 85% of students were graduating. It's now to 88%, and that's pretty good overall. Because we hear a lot of stories. I have to be careful. I'm not too negative on the media. I think the media tells you a lot of the negative stuff, but doesn't talk about the positives that's happening. So the beauty is we're seeing a more educated workforce, which means as we're transitioning and for good or bad, we've really done a lot of transitioning from being a manufacturing to being a knowledge-based worker, and that's necessary. And so the more people that we have with education in those areas, the better prepared we are to make a bigger impact on the economy with products and services, as opposed to having to outsource those types of things. And just from an adult higher education standpoint, if you look at this, between 1991 and 2011, the 25 to 44-year-old population in the U.S. grew only 1%. But the beauty is just 1%, the 25 to 44. So not a big population growth there. We've had we had the baby booms. My daughters are a part of that boom in the late 80s and 90s. But what's interesting is the adult undergraduate population, people going back to school, finishing degrees, when they talk about adult undergraduate, that's those degree completion people, was 51% in that same time period. And then if you look at the graduate enrollment, people going back for master's, was a 64% increase. So to me, from an economic standpoint, having those knowledge-based workers, having workers that are retraining or going back and retraining for to be better prepared in the kinds of jobs that, frankly, we're not even sure what those jobs are. I mean, there's some jobs that they could be going back for that haven't even been created yet, which is the beauty. If you're going back and you have that mindset of learning, that continuous learning mindset, you're much better prepared to make those adjustments. So those are probably the two that kind of come in the workforce and the education side, if I answered your question there.
All right, so what I'm hearing is that not only is Cal Baptist Online delivering content in a way that the students want it, you know, want it where I want it and when I want it, through online or hybrid or in these. I'm fascinated with just the idea of Starbucks style educational facilities. I mean, Starbucks has been historically the places for entrepreneurs to gather for meetings.
Absolutely.
And when you just slip that over and say, oh, we're going to have Starbucks environment for entrepreneurial education students, goodness, they're not going to cut. You're saying take over the local Starbucks.
Well, you see a lot of students, whether they're younger or older, in Starbucks. But see, the beauty of that center is, to take it one step further, the normal old way of doing a class for adults was going to school one night a week from 6 p.m. to 10:30. Now, you and I both know about 9:30, and when I was doing my doctorate, about 9:30, I was pretty wiped out, and so was the faculty member. And the other thing is, from an efficiency standpoint, that classroom usage, I can have one class in there between 6 and 10:30. When I do a hybrid, which is part online and part in class, those hybrid classes are from 6 to 7:50, and then the next class sessions start from 8 to 9:50. Similar time frame, but they're doing only half of their classes face-to-face, and the remainder are supported with online. So now I've been very efficient. I can have two classrooms in a small facility, but I really have four classroom sessions available every night per week. So these classrooms, these facilities that a lot of folks have, where they've got the 20 classrooms or 10 classrooms, and they're empty all day, and it's 10 or 20,000 square feet, I can do that in 3 or 4,000 square feet much more efficiently, And I've got space for people to come to if they so desire, that Starbucks type of space out in the front part of that.
Yeah. All right. So back to what I was leading up to. You're not only delivering content in the way that the student today wants it and when they want it and how they want it, where they want it. You're also teaching them to use technology. I mean, they're not going to finish a degree in the online program without being intimately connected to and competent in using the computer in a variety of ways, right?
Absolutely. And
thirdly, then you're also creating the process of continuous education, because it's not like in the same way, it's not a big step from a Starbucks to a Starbucks hybrid classroom. Mm-hmm. It's not a big step from online education as in the way that you're delivering it and TEDx talks or TED talks or online education from a myriad of channels that are offering it for free from some of the, you know, the most knowledgeable people in the world. You're actually getting people to live that continuing education program. It's not just continuous education means you're going to keep going back to school. It's you're going to continue to inhabit a school mentality.
Right. Because that technology usage, if you think about it, you know, you mentioned the computer, and that's how we think about online, and certainly that's a big part of it. But now, I have WebEx. I have students downloading WebEx on smartphones and iPads. So just like you're sitting in a Starbucks and you're listening to music, you can sit there and listen to a lecture or a class session. And be involved on something as small as a smartphone, and you can do it anytime, anywhere. So it utilizes the technology that you currently own and that you play with all the time.
It's not a big step to plug that into a radio so that when you're on a road trip, you are in a classroom.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if you think of the massive open online courses, you ask me where I see things, that's another thing that you're hearing a lot about. They're called MOOCs, or massive open online courses. A lot of higher ed is getting scared of that. I'm not at all. I think it's going to really be able to enhance some things, because you still have to have some kind of certification with the degree, and so you need those higher ed institutions to do that. But now I can pick and choose from some of the most foremost people for some of the lectures that I want to use. If it's, you know, in my case, it might be business. And it's there for them, and that can supplement the classroom environment.
What I'm hearing from you is that, yes, there's the role of the university or the institution in terms of certification. There's certainly the role of the institution in blasting through those siloed classroom mentalities that people have, so that they're open to seeing education in a variety of venues. But you're also providing people the notion that there is that online continuing education is not separate from your life.
Correct.
And I wonder if this whole notion of what we're looking for in the future, you talk, I mean, I think on your website talks about the new normal student. I wonder if the new normal student is a student who is going to be involved in education on a continuous basis, because things are moving so quickly.
Anymore, to really be on top of your game, regardless of what that your profession is, if you're not in a continuous learning environment, somebody else is, and they're going to, and you can't be upset just because they've done that and they've stayed ahead of that and they've stayed up on the recent trends or recent issues with regards to their profession, and you haven't. And who do you think is going to get ahead? That's not a bad thing. It's the old adage, you know, you get out of something what you put into it. And the beauty is if we can get students to have that mindset, whether they're 18-year-olds on a traditional campus or they're 30-year-olds degree completion student, then what we've done is we've helped them hopefully influence not just their own career, but to influence others to do the same, which can only be positive for, you know, our overall economy.
Well, let me ask you a question that occurs to me. traditionally, institutions like Cal Baptist and UCLA, UCI, Cal State system, they tend to be organized around degree granting. So you have a program. These are the courses that you'll be taking. And while you might pay for them in terms of course hours or courses themselves, you're buying a whole package.
Right.
Have you begun to think about how people will come in to say, I don't need a degree, I don't need a certification, what I want is that course or these three courses?
Right. There's a the answer is yes, and that's a great point to bring up. There's a book called Do It Yourself University that's out, and the author, I've met the author, but her name escapes me, but a fascinating book about how, and when I say the future, we're talking about now, where students more and more, there will be a segment of the population that says, look, I need to learn in this area, so I need to take courses just in this area. I need to put that together. And whether that's formalized in an actual degree or a certificate, I think from the professional development standpoint of things, I think that's where it's really turning now, because professional development in using some of these tools allows you to get the knowledge base that you want without necessarily going back to the to school for a degree. Or what it does is it gets you very excited about learning, and then ultimately it kind of pulls you into a degree program or helps you focus that. So I think it's a very good thing. In fact, here at CBU Online, we are developing out professional development for that very reason, because there are going to be some people, and in fact, I wouldn't say some, the majority of people still don't go back for degrees. They go back and get some training, the ones that do training. And so we need to be able to supply that to them. Some of the changes that are happening allow us to do that.
Are you talking about Anya Kamenetz?
Yes. Thank you very much. I actually had her book on my desk up until recently. So, yeah, fascinating, very young lady, fascinating background, and it's a great book that gives you a real big perspective on the needs and the desires of the changing student. Uh-huh. So the old traditional way of you take these classes, you take this class, you get the degree in this, I think that's going to continue to be changing.
Well, listen, David, this has been a wonderful conversation. I've really enjoyed it. I also think that, I think you've pointed us to somebody else we need to have on the radio here.
Well, I hope so.
I certainly think that we should be looking at the president of the university and getting him here to talk about, because I know that he does a lot of looking at China. And getting Dr. Ron Ellis on, I think, would be something we want to look forward to. Well, David, what would you like to leave the audience with? If you had a microphone in a minute, what would you tell them?
Again, I appreciate very much you asking me to be on the show, and this is some great work, and I hope I've been able to help contribute. I think the main thing is that most people, unfortunately, don't feel like they can attain. They don't have the time or the resources to go back and get a degree or go back to enhance learning. That's 9 times out of 10 because somebody told you couldn't, and I'm here to tell you can. I've met so many people in my career that really were on the edge there, and take advantage of every learning opportunity you can, whether it's a degree, non-degree, professional development. You know, obviously from a degree standpoint, I think that's a critical piece, and there are so many great schools out there. Certainly we'd love to see them at Cal Baptist, but there's others, and I would say take advantage of that. The second thing would be, you know, you talked about having Dr. Ellis on. He would be outstanding. I think being able to learn from people like Dr. Ellis about leadership, about entrepreneurship, how to think differently, learning from people like that could be a tremendous opportunity. And I've been fortunate. Any success I've had is because somebody mentored me and helped me along the way, and I was lucky enough to take advantage of it, and I'd encourage people to do the same.
Well, thank you very much for being with us, David. It's been wonderful, and we have certainly used some of the technology that you use. We're using Skype here to run this radio show. We use GoToMeeting all the time, and here we have the magic of modern technology.
That's very good. Well, thank you again, and it's been a pleasure to be a part of your show and your audience there.
Look forward to seeing you the next time we'll get together.
All right, thank you.
So there you have it, one of the fascinating creative universities in Southern California, California Baptist University in Riverside, wonderful example of a university that is on not only a growth trajectory in terms of students and faculty and jobs, but also in terms of what it is delivering and how it's delivering it by offering new schools in the university specifically targeted to meet the needs of jobs in nursing and in engineering, and you heard in avionics in Southern California, and also looking at how to deliver those courses in education, new technology, new technological ways in new venues. I was fascinated with the whole idea of a Starbucks-like educational satellite unit. Wonderful ideas. I encourage you, if you're interested in this, to take a look at Cal Baptist University to help you in degree completion for people who are looking for traditional undergraduate education or some of the graduate programs that they offer. Well, this is the Pilgrim on the 405. 405 does sometimes get way out there to the 215 and the 91 and all of those places in the Inland Empire. A lot of fun being alive right now in Southern California.
You've been listening to the only show that takes you where others won't. Out into the wilderness, past the frontiers of what you thought was possible. With your own personal guide, the Pilgrim, on the 405.